The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. It's the bonus show because we're moving into a Friday. Gary, what do you know?
Here we go.
Here we are.
Yeah. I mean, really interesting day yesterday. Woke up early, caught the press conference, as I'm sure a lot of people did. We'll have that coming up here in just a little bit. We'll hear from the Chicago Police Superintendent, Eddie Johnson, yesterday, and that was just pure greatness.
Well, it was clear by his tone. It sounded like he was holding some things back, but it was certainly clear by his tone and his words that there was a lot of frustration and anger inside his department over what happened, according to the charges. Jussie Smollett turned himself in early Thursday morning. No CNN cameras, you know, breaking doors down and taking, you know, the authorities taking CNN and the cameras and reporters along. No one got the heads up. It was funny because I was watching some of the coverage by some of the networks, and one of the reporters for CNN said, "Well, who knew this was going to happen?" And I thought, I did. I mean, it was why you were camped out there. I mean, he was, you know, he's a reporter, and he had been there. I got the idea that they had been there maybe all night. But, yeah, it had been clear that one of two things was going to happen. I mean, the police were asking, looking for him to come in. And so they were either going to go looking for him or he was going to work with his lawyer to come in and turn himself in. That's how it works. So, and learned a lot about what the police say, what those coppers say went down. But when you lay this thing out on the table in all of its pieces, and still hearing from his lawyer, his bond was set, his bail was set at $100,000, so he had to come up with $10,000, and he gets out and his lawyers make this statement essentially that he's innocent. That's going to be an interesting road to go down. Because if they're going to fight it, they're going to have to come up with a lot of stuff that essentially counters every piece of physical evidence that the police have. And according to many reports, that's pretty substantial. They're pretty sure here that this is a done deal. And when you listen to the superintendent on Thursday, pretty much spell it out. I don't know defense attorney.
Yeah, I don't know where you go either. I know Garagos wasn't there. One of his other attorneys was. And I expect to see him on TV, though, over the next week or so. I did find it interesting that the first thing that they decided to attack was not the media as they initially had done, but let's go after the police.
Right.
And I got to tell you, when I saw the response, I burst out laughing. Mm. If you watched the press conference yesterday, the last thing you want to do is go up against the Superintendent Johnson.
Right.
That's the last thing that you want to do.
Yeah.
If you're attempting as a lawyer to make the case against the police, which means you're making it through Superintendent Johnson, you've got a tough, tough road to go. One of the things, you see this on social media, especially from the left. Why would he do this? Why would he do this? Why would he do this? I know that the National Review had a column. Why would Jussie Smollett do this? They cried. Kyle Smith wrote it, and I think he hit it. I think he hit it right in the button. It's something that you and I have talked about for the longest time. What is liberalism about? What is the highest goal of liberalism right now. You see that it is the absolute major goal of the Democrat Party. It's where the Democrat Party is going. The highest rung you can go for is not president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's victimhood.
Yeah, right.
It's to become a victim. And in Kyle Smith's column in National Review, he had the quote from George Will. When they make victimhood a coveted status that confers privileges, victims proliferate. The highest thing that you can do, the biggest badge of honor, even if you're a celebrity, is to become a victim. So if you wish to know why you're seeing more of this, it's because it is the highest badge of the highest award that you can get as somebody on the left is to be labeled by the media and mm-hmm. sympathized by the media as a victim.
Yeah. Well, then you saw the media in weird ways rephrase it. You know, they had invested heavily, especially the pundits that are on the cable channels, had invested heavily in this. You heard Don Lemon on that would have been Wednesday evening talking about that, you know, it's not Jussie Smollett's case that he lost in the court of public opinion. Yeah, it is.
Well, you tell me who else's fault was
if
it?
If the allegations are true, he's fully responsible for it.
Right.
But and then you had Van Jones and some kind of bizarre
I saw that.
Comparison to Jackie Robinson saying that Smollett is an icon because he's black and he's gay. He is with the black community. He is breaking ground. He's on this high-profile show, and he is an icon because he is the actor is openly gay and the character on the show is openly gay. And I thought to myself, no, you might be able to, and I won't compare it to Jackie Robinson because, wow, but you might be able to use the word in that sense with RuPaul. Not Smollett. And the reason I say that is because I don't know. How many people would have watched that show in its years? What's it been on? 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. the show Empire?
Right.
I mean, if you want to, you know, I know that you know, RuPaul's a drag queen. But if you talk about stereotypes, and if you have to include, if it's important to you to include skin color, the icon thing in relation to that wouldn't be Jussie Smollett. It would be RuPaul. It would be,
well, but you
because
know,
you talk about household names, you right. talk about breaking down mm-hmm. barriers, and you talk about, and frankly, RuPaul just became, it became, because RuPaul's part comedian, it just became one of these entertainment things, and nobody really cared. Is it entertaining or is it not? Right.
Well, you know, it. I, you know, we get this all the time. Well, you guys are older, and you know, me. I don't know what technically you are, but I'm a baby boomer. You know, you boomers don't understand because
I don't have a group
because you lived yeah. you lived in a society. That was so strict. You didn't accept other people's culture. It's like you don't know.
Wow.
It's just like you don't have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
Right.
When you think about the 70s, to me, in many ways, the 70s when I was in college is more open than any college is today. The clubs that we hang out, the clubs that we hung out with, people were. I'll never forget. I used to one of the things because. Like you, I was into all forms of music.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, used to go to a place. It was the CBGBs of Buffalo, where I grew up, a place called the Continental. Mm-hmm. Everybody went in there. It didn't
right.
matter.
Right.
You had men in dresses back then.
Right.
It did. People went in to see the music. You had construction workers. You had business people. You had it. It was a complete melting pot, and people were all in there. Nobody cared. It was like, whatever, you know, do whatever. I like the band. You know, I mean, it's like nobody really cared.
Well, how many
you know,
this, different artists over the years well, and true icons well, had were had come out and were open, or well, the fans knew Elton before John, before they even came out.
Elton John in 76.
Right.
I remember when I saw Elton John in 76, the Blue Moves Tour with Boz Skaggs. That was a great show.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, everybody knew he was gay. He was out.
Right.
And so we're talking, what, 43 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so this whole thing that the left trying to sit there and make 2019 sound as if it's 1950 in this country
is
just the most bizarre thing. And Van Jones trying to compare Jussie Smollett to Jackie Robinson any way is just the most bizarre thing you could ever say.
Well,
and wrong, by the way.
Right,
wrong.
Right. And I'm sure that they, you know, that people had their, you know, opinions about some of these artists in the past, whether it was David Bowie.
Bowie!
But the whole, yes. You know, what they call it, gender bending.
Well, Bowie was before even Elton John.
Yeah.
Because Bowie's going back, you know.
You go back to the Ziggy Stardust days, and it's.
You're going about, 68, 69, 70?
Yeah,
71, yeah.
Right.
You're going back 50 years. It's
well, like, and then what? And then from that, you had your crappy, what they call them, glam metal bands of the 80s. They were all just copying Rod Stewart and David Bowie. You know what I mean? And in their style. And with the makeup and everything else. We have bands like Poison, maybe even Kiss.
Well go
New
to,
York Dolls?
New York Dolls. Go to a George Clinton and a Parliament Funkadelic concert back in 1974.
Right.
It was a melting pot of people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it was just, it's like, I hate it. And I don't know how old Van Jones is.
Right.
I don't know. His 40s or whatever.
I'm guessing he's in his 40s. Yeah,
but it's sits there and goes, you know, you don't even know. You have no idea what the culture of this country actually has been. You're sitting there in your own liberal bubble.
Well, I hate the word when you throw the word icon in there.
Oh, it just
give me a break. And then comparing him to Jackie Robinson, that was just that. Sorry. The whole pop culture thing over the years. I mean, I remember I was really young the first time I saw Judas Priest in concert. Rob Halford. At that point, he had not come out, but his fans knew. We knew. We didn't care. You're there to see the band. I don't care about the guy's personal life. I don't care about the bass player's girlfriend either. Play the music. You know, but see, the left tries to wear the cape.
Well, until Al Gore came after him.
Yeah, right, exactly. No kidding.
Or Tipper Gore came after him.
Exactly. And then who showed up? Another guy who wore makeup on stage, Dee Snider of Twisted Sister. Remember, he went and testified. Remember that? That whole thing? And he showed up without his makeup, and everybody was like, oh, he's not wearing his makeup. He's not wearing it. We were freaking out that he wasn't wearing makeup.
You know, one of the things, I played it for somebody the other day, and man, I wish he was alive today just to see how he would view the left. And it's not George Carlin. I wonder how Frank Zappa would look at the left today in this
That's
country.
A good I mean, question.
One of the great quotes that he and I'm paraphrasing here, but I think I'm doing it in an intellectually honest way, is when he talked about the record companies of the 1960s, and he said there was more freedom and more, you know, different music that was being put out, and it was being put out by the old white guys chomping on cigars, you know, in the record companies.
Yeah.
And he said they sat there, and he said people are like shocked when you tell them that. He said, but they're sitting there, and they would hear this stuff and go, I have no idea what the hell it is. Hey, maybe you can sell it. Do it.
Right.
He said, when you started bringing in, he goes, the hippies. You brought in the young. And then they sat there and they said, okay, this is pretty good. Well, these young hippies, they seem to like it. Let's bring in a young hippie because they'll know the latest thing. And the young hippie ended up being much more prejudiced about the music and much less open about it. He goes, we were better off with the old white guy sitting in the room chomping on the cigar than we are with the supposedly, and he probably would use this word today, the woke people up there that are completely prejudiced about everything. Music, art, ethnicity, culture, whatever. They wish to segregate everything instead of opening up because they went, I don't know, can it sell?
Well, and that's really what it was all about. I mean, the problem that the far left has right now is the insistence of the identity.
Yeah.
Elton John's identity was with his music.
Nobody cared.
Freddie Mercury's identity was with his music.
I'm glad you brought up since Bohemian Rhapsody's out there.
If I'm at a Queen concert and I saw them one time, like most great concerts, you're singing out loud, very horribly, by the way, and nobody else can hear you, which is great. But you're singing along with their music. You're one with the band. You don't care about his identity. He's singing, and you're singing his music. That's what it was all about.
Well, Brian May said it. He said, people, well, really? Well, Freddie was gay? He goes, the name of the band was Queen.
Yeah,
I'll never forget that. He goes,
well, I mean,
how didn't you get it?
Right. Well, and I guess, you know, back then, whether it was Elton John, whether it was, you know, and the fans of Judas Priest that ever saw the band live, or Queen, or any of, when the, you know, well, and then they finally came out and was like, and? We didn't need them to come out. We didn't care when they did. Right. Didn't care before they did.
We got a great show ahead. We'll have excerpts from the police, Chicago police superintendent coming up. Plus your calls and comments all coming up on the Friday show, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90 Red Eye, coming up now. Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris both coming out for reparations.
Yeah, right.
And so we simply ask this question before you get into the morality of it or whatever. How can you pay reparations if race is a social construct?
Right. Because what I would ask Ms. Harris or Ms. Warren, certainly Ms. Warren believes this, that you can belong to any nationality you choose. Certainly she believes that, right? So I'll just ask the question to...
A race, but not a specific tribe.
Exactly. Just so we're clear. I would ask then Kamala Harris, do you believe, as the former administration did, the Obama administration, that anyone can be what they say they are? Do you support transgenders? Yes. Do you support transracial?
Right.
Because if you do, then how is the whole reparations thing going to work? For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
After a midweek February winter storm in the east, we'll take a break there today. Sunshine for the most part from the Midwest into the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. The areas of heavy rain continue for the south in the lower Tennessee Valley. Showers and possible thunderstorms today in eastern Texas, over through the Ark-La-Tex, into the lower Tennessee Valley, through the states of Kentucky, and over to Georgia along the coast. Now, if you're running I-40 today across the state of Oklahoma, you should be clear. But when you get into Arkansas, Tennessee, you're going to pick up some heavy amounts of rain. I-55 will get a good dousing today, too. And then north of St. Louis, things dry out clear to Chicago. Heavy snow is forecast for the southwest and southern Rockies. Over a foot for some of the ranges in Arizona, southern Utah, and southwestern Colorado. And there's a weekend look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90 Red Eye.
Bona Show.
And he is Eric Carney. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. I want to play this, the audio yesterday of the, well, the introduction of comments from the Chicago Police Department, and the introduction came from the Chicago Police Superintendent, Eddie Johnson. This is from yesterday morning.
Before I get started on why we're here, you know, as I look out into the crowd, I just wish that the families of gun violence in this city got this much attention, because that's who really deserves the amount of attention that we're giving to this particular incident. So this morning, I come to you not only as the superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, but also as a black man who spent his entire life living in the city of Chicago. I know the racial divide that exists here. I know how hard it's been for our city and our nation to come together. And I also know the disparities, and I know the history. This announcement today recognizes that Empire actor Jussie Smollett took advantage of the pain and anger of racism to promote his career. I'm left hanging my head and asking why. Why would anyone, especially an African-American man, use the symbolism of a noose to make false accusations? How could someone look at the hatred and suffering associated with that symbol and see an opportunity to manipulate that symbol to further his own public profile? How can an individual who's been embraced by the city of Chicago turn around and slap everyone in this city in the face by making these false claims? Bogus police reports cause real harm. They do harm to every legitimate victim who's in need of support by police and investigators, as well as the citizens of this city. Chicago hosts one of the largest pride parades in the world, and we're proud of that as a police department and also as a city. We do not, nor will we ever tolerate hate in our city, whether that hate is based on an individual's sexual orientation, race, or anything else. So I'm offended by what's happened, and I'm also angry. I love the city of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department, warts and all. But this publicity stunt was a scar that Chicago didn't earn and certainly didn't deserve. To make things worse, the accusations within this phony attack received national attention for weeks. Celebrities, news commentators, and even presidential candidates weighed in on something that was choreographed by an actor. First, Smollett attempted to gain attention by sending a false letter that relied on racial, homophobic, and political language. When that didn't work, Smollett paid $3,500 to stage this attack and drag Chicago's reputation through the mud in the process. And why? This stunt was orchestrated by Smollett because he was dissatisfied with his salary. So he concocted a story about being attacked. Now, our city has problems. We know that. We have problems that have affected people from all walks of life, and we know that. But to put the national spotlight on Chicago for something that is both egregious and untrue is simply shameful. I'm also concerned about what this means moving forward for hate crimes. Now, of course, the Chicago Police Department will continue to investigate all reports of these types of incidents with the same amount of vigor that we did with this one. My concern is that hate crimes will now publicly be met with a level of skepticism that previously didn't happen. That said, Smollett was treated as a victim throughout this investigation until we received evidence that led detectives in another direction. I couldn't be more proud of the unrelenting detective work that went into this investigation, and I couldn't be more proud of every investigator that played a part in it. The detective work that we saw in this case is indicative of the work that our detectives do every day in this city. This case in particular involved hours of video evidence,
which when combined with old-fashioned police work, uncovered the truth. These detectives deserve all the credit in the world for carefully analyzing the leads and the evidence for weeks before coming to their conclusion. I'd also like to thank the FBI for their help in this investigation. The FBI's partnership with CPD has been pivotal in this particular case. I only hope that the truth about what happened receives the same amount of attention that the hoax did. I'll continue to pray for this troubled young man who resorted to both drastic and illegal tactics to gain attention. I'll also continue to pray for our city, asking that we can move forward from this and begin to heal.
Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson yesterday, and you know, asking the question, you know, why did he do it? And I noticed on social media yesterday, there was the great debate. Well, did he do it for the money or because he hated Trump? I hated Trump, and he did it for the money. I hated Trump. Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most important thing is, what avenue did he decide to choose? Mm-hmm. The avenue he decided to choose for whatever is where you see the left going in this country, which is to celebrate victimhood. That you saw it even after, because you had mentioned the comments from Van Jones, that he's an, you know, I can't believe he was an icon like Jackie Robinson. Well, that's ridiculous. He was not.
No, he wasn't.
And you know, nowhere stop close. That kind of. But it shows you again. Not just the celebrity status of being a celebrity, but the celebrity status you get on the left when you are perceived as a victim. If you ever want to see what victim mentality that has been created by the left in this country, what people will do, what some people will do to try to attain that, for whatever means, because they hate Trump or they wanted more money. Doesn't matter. It's what did they use? What did they see available out there? What was the avenue? The avenue is, wow. The mindset that I belong to, that I'm a part of, celebrates victimhood more than even accomplishments.
Yeah, it should be no surprise to anyone who's followed the left over the last few decades or longer, when you teach young people that they are a victim simply because they exist, that mentality will go with them the rest of their lives,
and they will attempt to take advantage of it at any moment
because they'll believe that the world owes them something. Which is how you take words like hope and change and turn it into a brilliant political tactic. And I don't think that's hyperbole. I think it was brilliant. Why? Because it was the blank canvas that everybody applied their own pictures and stories to. And wait a minute, hope and change means I've got something coming to me. I'm going to wait here until the government delivers something to me because I'm a victim. And it still goes on today. Bernie wants you to believe you're a victim of rich people. That it's the rich guy's fault that you have $200,000 in college debt. They want you to believe you're a victim at every turn. And if you're not, if you believe that you're not, you need to go back and find a reason to be a victim. Even if you're successful, even if you're Lady Gaga, you need to come out and somehow feel oppressed.
That you're a victim. They have created a culture of victimhood. And so you're surprised when an evil person decides to use that for their own greedy or whatever warp mindset that they have, or bigoted mindset that they have, or racist mindset that they have. Mm-hmm. in that case, hey, you're the one that wanted to start. Smollett is the one that wanted to start. It was white people, white Trump supporters. He made it racial.
Mm-hmm.
He made it racial. He made it about sexuality. Yeah. He's the one. Right. I'm going to take advantage of everything. Everything that we've been taught, the complete mindset of the liberal, and I'm going to use it for my own perverted goals.
And now the real victims of the world, especially in the coming weeks and months, and let's hope it doesn't last for long, there will be a second thought when someone claims to be a victim, and they just might be a victim, which means that the attention that they deserve is diverted and isn't given fully. And as the police superintendent points out, I mean, how many problems in Chicago weren't dealt with during that period because you had significant resources on this story because it had become such a huge story, national television, all over social media. You have to fix it. You have to do something if you're in charge of the Chicago police. And every bit of it was false.
If you want to get in, lines open now, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let us go to Dave in Chicago. Dave, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing? Great. A frightening thought experiment to ask yourself is, how far was this guy prepared to go? You know, in Chicago, if it weren't for the polar vortex that night, that's normally a pretty busy area, even at that time of night. There's homeless guys. There's people working in all the buildings down there, stepping out for a smoke. If somebody had gotten picked up, would he have identified and even testified against some random guy? Imagine what would have happened then, even if the media got a hold of the identity of somebody.
Well, I mean,
they would have splashed it all over the news.
I mean, people are wrongly convicted. That does happen. And if, you see a couple of guys and then all of a sudden they can't account where they're, can't account for where they were. And we went through that yesterday, but. Simple story or long story short here. Imagine a couple of people had been charged and they were completely innocent. How far was Smollett willing to go?
Or any persons of interest like the brothers mm-hmm. were, and the rush to identify who those people were.
And he said during the interview, I had no doubt in my mind that that was them.
Right.
Well, now we know why. Because according to police, he was working with them. Yeah. And he knew they were going to be there on camera. Of course, he had no doubt it was them. By the way, what kind of beauty store sells ski masks? Is that to say if you're not beautiful enough, here we have these? That just kind of crossed my mind randomly during the day. But this whole thing could have gone... Imagine that, and it does happen. Imagine there were two other guys that were caught on camera walking in that area, and then they were picked up, and it wasn't the brothers. It was two other guys, and they were picked up, and they were charged with this. How far would they go?
With the media's rush to judgment and identify who these people are.
Right.
And then go through their background and find out who these people are and talk to their friends and everything else. But that's a question that we asked yesterday. How far was Smollett ready to go on this?
Well, remember when, the whole Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin thing, right? Because everybody was like, well, they're showing the wrong picture. They're showing these pictures of Trayvon Martin looking innocent. Look at these other pictures where he doesn't look so innocent. And we said, that doesn't matter. What he was doing in that picture on that day doesn't matter. And we don't know Zimmerman. We have no idea if he's a good guy or if he's a racist at heart. The question is, what happened in those final moments?
Right.
Because Zimmerman could be a racist, but did he break the law? Trayvon Martin could have been a good kid, bad kid, but did he deserve to die at the hands of Zimmerman? And was it lawful? Was that action by Zimmerman lawful? And that was the only question. Because if you look at a situation that could have played out in this case, let's say they picked up a couple of guys that were also on a camera, and then it turned out, oh, well, yeah, these guys have a record. And one of them has a record of violent behavior in the past. Well, there you go. You're already heading down the road for a wrongful conviction. I'm wondering, with Smollett's side, would he be willing to say, yeah, that was then?
Or they were Trump supporters.
Oh, even worse, right?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning and welcome. All right, we're going to play this audio cut from 39 years ago, and we have a very important question to ask afterwards. This event happened 39 years ago today.
11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Unbelievable.
I tell you, I could listen to the crowd. I could just listen to the crowd for the next 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I could just sit there. I was like, oh,
yeah.
I'm doing a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
but the question that we have is, at that time during that game, who was John Brennan and Bernie Sanders cheering for?
Which team were they supporting? Huh? Did that make Bernie cry? Did Bernie cry? He considers that to be the saddest movie of all time. Oh, wow.
He won't even talk to Kurt Russell.
No. There's no way. There's no way.
Kurt Russell, by the way,
was in the
movie. Played Herb Brooks.
Wow.
And John Brennan voted for, I can't think of his name at the moment here,
voted for the communist.
Voted for the communist candidate for president.
76?
76,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
the CIA director who is now criticizing and saying that Trump, of course, colluded with the Russians. That's the whole point there.
In case
you're trying to figure out how we put this all together.
Yeah,
you know the funny thing is, I mean, there was nothing. I remember where I was at that time. I remember when we were told. I remember keeping updates. I remember I was working at Riley Gear in North Tonawanda, New York.
Yeah,
and running my internal grinder, and. What people have to realize is the game was not shown live in the United States. They wanted to wait till prime time. What a mistake that was. and so you were being kept up on the score by radio.
Right.
And when they won, we were just you couldn't believe it. I mean, when you were getting updates on the radio, listening to the whatever the sports station was. And they were saying, okay, it's the end of the second period, and it's 3-2 Russia. And all of a sudden, it's 3-3. And all of a sudden, 4-3. And it's funny because everybody's just, wandering around the company I was working at, and we were working second shift. I worked second shift at that time. And when they won, we couldn't believe it. And when they repeated it, I think most of us watched the last 10 minutes of the repeat of it in the inspection department of the machine shop that I worked in. We all walked up and watched it. And then I believe they repeated it the next day because I remember watching it the next day. I don't know if somebody had... There was no DVR at the time.
Right, yeah.
If somebody had recorded it, but I remember watching it the next day. So I don't know if that was live or somebody recorded it. And that was a game you watched for a month. You watched that over and over and over.
I think they showed it. I think they repeated. If I'm not mistaken, I think they did repeat it. Because I remember watching
morning,
it,
yes.
And it was not. I knew that it was not live, and I knew what had happened, but I didn't. But there was no way to back then. I would have been just turned 14. So I probably didn't follow it as closely, the entire story of how it went down. Watching it for me was still like watching it live because
yes.
I knew was the ending. And the suspense of it all was. By the way, that arena today is named Herb Brooks Arena that they wanted. Still there at Lake Placid. Which was built for, that it was built for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't believe it was.
According to Wikipedia, it was.
Well, that sure is an old building for being built in 1979 or 80 for the Olympics, because that's an old building.
Yeah,
the hockey arena.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it was built in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was wondering if it was. Oh, was it built for the Olympics in the Lake Placid Olympics prior to that? It
says was built for the 1980 Winter Olympics.
Wow. Because it's an old when you look at it, it's an old building.
Maybe they just used old plans and old material. It could be.
Well, as you get older, because remember, there was, and I can't speak for the rest of the country. I mean, I come from hockey country. So, on the border. And
I was on the other border at that time.
And it was, well, I say on the border because the Russian hockey team, the Red Army team had defeated, and that's who they were, the Red Army team had defeated the Canadians a number of times and defeated the NHL a number of times. I remember the Canadian series, at times. And it was, there were a lot of ticked off people. Russian. they were beating the professionals on a consistent basis.
Yeah, yeah.
So nobody thought.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing that it is. Team sport wise,
right.
There's nothing that will ever come close to it. And I don't believe that we'll ever see a sporting event as long as this country exists that captured the heart of Americans who didn't give a damn about hockey.
Yeah, right.
I don't believe that there was a sporting event ever that had an effect on this nation. And I don't think there will ever be one. It was unbelievable that weekend when it happened.
Right.
And then remember, they had to play another game. They had to play another game to actually win the gold medal on that Sunday morning, because this was, I believe, was a Friday night game, and then they had to play on Sunday morning to win it. But there was I remember watching it over and over again. You'd watch the last period over and over, and you just couldn't believe it. And it was like watching it for the first time every time.
Yeah.
And it probably didn't have the numbers that a Super Bowl had. I don't know what the numbers were for that night. Probably a lot of people didn't even know what happened. It wasn't like an event that people were expecting to watch. But what it created through this country was unbelievable. I've never, ever, and I don't believe I will ever see it the rest of my life, and I don't believe most people who are living right now will ever see anything like that. But as you get older and you find out more, a couple of great documentaries. So one documentary was Miracle on Ice, but the other side, looking at it from the Russian point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And who was it? I can't believe the hockey player that eventually got the first passport ever, first Soviet citizen to get a passport to work outside the country. And he ended up joining New Jersey and then ended up, he didn't defect, and then ended up going to the great Detroit team of the late 90s that won.
Was his last name Trump?
No, that won the Stanley Cup, but he went back with his daughter.
Mm.
They went back to Lake Placid. But there are two documentaries, Red Army and then the Miracle on Ice from the other side. And I'm sure that's not the name of the documentary, but it they go back and they talk to all the old Russian players, all the old Soviet players. And they'll be blunt with you. They hated the system. Mm. They hated the system. They hated Viktor Tikhonov, the coach. They hated him. Hated him. They hated working in that system. They felt loyal to their country. There was a loyalty that you feel. They understood, though, and they understand so much more of adults as adults, how they were just political pawns in the propaganda machine. They understand that. And so it's fascinating because if you would have ever told me that someday I would be watching a documentary and feel sorry for the former Soviet players, I would have told you at that time, what are you out of their mind? They're robots. They're this. And then you realize, no, they're actually human beings. And when you see them as, you know, men in their 50s and 60s, you know, most of them, I think, in their 60s, probably late 60s now, and see them discussing, you know, what they went through. And then to see that the Russian five, the majority, I believe, on that team that won or that lost in Lake Placid, then played for Detroit and won a Stanley Cup.
Hmm.
And as one of them said, you know, we finally won in America. I got to see what the American dream was about, coming from playing from the Soviet team to winning with the Detroit Red Wings. To see that evolution it's an amazing documentary to watch.
Yeah.
You ever get a chance to do it? ESPN has been showing a lot lately. So
yeah, interesting. And you know, there was a TV movie roughly a year after.
Yeah, the first
and it was
one.
Called Miracle on Ice. Carl Malden,
yeah,
as the coach.
Of course, I've watched that.
Yeah. Well, you would because you were looking to recreate that moment. That has to be the first time I watched a full hockey game. It has to be.
I'm probably sure was that for a lot was. Of Americans.
I'm sure that it was. Having been raised in Texas, and at that point living on the southern border, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that had to have been the first time. Now, I did see parts of, and I say parts of because I was walking through the room and we'd gotten cable, Showtime, and I think it was called Fanfare back then. And the movie Slapshot?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't know that they were going to allow that kind of language on TV, and neither did my father, you know, because we'd been used to movies being edited.
Right.
Well, he turns on the new, you know, Fanfare, which was Showtime, and there's the Slapshot movie. I'm walking through the room, and all of a sudden, words start flying. I'm like, whoa, and my dad jumps up and turns the TV off, looks around, and just kind of walks away slowly. Yeah, that was maybe the first, exposure to hockey in pop culture, because otherwise I don't remember anything else. I don't remember any hockey movie even before that. But in terms of watching a hockey match, that had to have been the first one, and you sat down. You watched the whole thing because you knew what was going to happen, and you were just waiting for that moment to cheer. But I don't know that anything could prepare you for that kind of match.
You know, one of the things that you can see, because you look, it's a discussion now: socialism, communism, and mm-hmm. everything else.
Sure.
And it like I said, to watch Red Army or The Miracle on Ice from the other side and see these former Soviet players when they talk about it and they actually get into the mindset of a young hockey player understanding that, wait a minute, you're throwing this kind of propaganda at me that this is for the collective of the entire of the entire country, yet what you are doing is restricting my complete individual freedom
right.
to be the individual that I wish to be and experience what I wish to experience. And you see that they, even as young hockey players in the Soviet Union, where, I mean, you were brainwashed from the beginning, and to see that they still understood that and actually bucked the system.
Yeah.
Where you're sitting there in front of a general because you played for the Red Army when you were in the Army. And a few of them showed their disappointment, and they were basically told, you either do what we tell you to do, or you'll end up in Siberia.
Right.
But they actually came out victorious in the end because it was a perestroika at that time, and then Gorbachev came in, and so they were able to actually, you know, one by one, get out and play in the National Hockey League. But you realize, because when they played for the Soviet Union, you hated them because they were representative of the Soviet Union. When you break it down and you get to be older and you get to be wiser and you see their individual stories, that they're just human beings
right.
under a system of oppression, you felt sorry for them.
You know, it's interesting. The TV show on FX, The Americans, was about two Russian spies that come over, man and a woman, and then they pretended to be married. They actually then ended up falling in love. They have two kids who are Americans because they live here, and those two kids were Americans, but they were Russian spies the whole time. But back and forth over the years during that series, they were talking about, you know, the difference in the life, what they have here as opposed to over there. And I thought it was an interesting take, because a lot of times the writers in Hollywood won't explore, especially in, you know, in later years, and this is a recent show, it just went off the air, just finished up last year, but they wouldn't explore that. They'll just, you know, well, this was better, this was a better way of life, and they went back and forth, and the couple was struggling, going, look at how much freedom you have here. And, you know, and essentially they're going to have to, at some point, return home to the Soviet Union, and it was a very interesting show to watch because of that, I think, that struggle in those characters.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on driver wellness. Establishing a regular exercise routine is nearly impossible when spending days and nights away from home. Finding enough room and enough time to exercise while off duty on the road is tough, but a little creativity can produce some results for your efforts. When taking a break, take a longer walk outside before returning to your cab. It might get you closer to a goal of 10,000 daily steps. But if you're going to walk, remember to be aware of your surroundings and stay safe. Try working out inside your sleeper. Do sit-ups before bedtime. Purchase a resistance band for rowing exercises. Both will increase your heart rate and burn calories in the process. Remember, a little effort can go a long way toward a healthier future. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We're just talking about the Miracle on Ice, which was 39 years ago. Today, we'll get back to talking about Jussie Smollett and the fact that he was charged yesterday and what may happen now, and get to more of your phone calls on it. But it was Slava Fedosov, who played for Detroit with the Russian Five, that won a Stanley Cup, and he is the one that got the first. He got the first passport to leave, you know, to actually leave the Soviet Union and work elsewhere, which was monumental because nobody had ever done that in the Soviet Union, and it was a hockey player who did that. And so he's the one that actually confronted. He went up and confronted the Red Army general, and he said, I'm not going to play for you. And they basically told him, you don't play for us, you're going to go to Siberia. And a week later, they let him go. And it was because of Gorbachev and perestroika and glasnost and all that was going on in the country at the time.
Right.
And so he hit it the right time. But it took a lot of guts to do what he did.
Right.
You think about it. And it pains me to say anything complimentary ever about the Red Army team. Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't. No, because it would.
Well,
you realize,
understand who the players were,
right?
You know, and what power they didn't have, and who actually was in charge, and you put it all in perspective. When you learn that, then you understand.
You realize that in a communist system. As an individual, you are a pawn of the system.
Right. I mean, the comparison, blaming the people of Cuba for the Castros, blaming the people of Venezuela for Chavez or Maduro. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
And that's just
blaming
not the
an
case.
Individual.
Right. They're the, you know, they're the victims. It's going to be interesting political season because, you know, there's so much out there now, right now already with Bernie deciding, you know, and announcing. I wonder if it's going to be different for him than 2016. I have to believe it is because social media is much more active.
Making overnight radio great again. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Cronin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Thank you so much for being here this morning. Let's get back to some of your calls and comments on Jussie Smollett. I was going to play a couple of audio cuts, but my computer just went on me.
All right.
Just went on the fritz. But that's expected, right?
Sure.
And I was just saying just a couple of moments ago to you how fast our Wi-Fi is.
On other devices.
On other devices. That doesn't affect our computer, but I was just complimenting him. Our Wi-Fi is just so dang fast. Now if we could just get the wired up stuff to work.
Yeah. The hardware, please.
Yes. But so let's head to you. We go to Wayne in Illinois. Wayne, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Thanks so much for taking my call. I just have a short comment. I think this guy that broke the law and created a phony scenario should get the same beating that Roseanne got for doing much less. You know, everybody is preaching equality and all that nonsense. And you know what? He should never be allowed to perform again.
Well, look, that's up to I don't worry about the private sector. It was funny because I was talking to Independent Bob yesterday. There I am in the supermarket. He calls me. I haven't talked to him really about it in about 2 months. And he was just going off on everything. Basically the same, one of the same things that he said. They're Hollywood's hypocrites. They fired Roseanne. How come he's not fired yet? It's like, because Roseanne was a Trump supporter. They didn't like it. They were wary of her to begin with. You understand their politics. They are going to favor and give the benefit of the doubt to people whose opinion that they agree with.
Yeah, and 20th Century Fox has come out and said, we're now weighing our options.
Yes.
Vastly different than he's not being written off the show than it was you know, he's not his role isn't going to be diminished and all the other things that were being said along the way. And now and then after he was arraigned, I believe it was later in the day on Thursday, at least a couple of media sources said that they did not return a call for comment there at the production. Now, he returned to the set after he got out. On Thursday, and they said to, you know, do the work that they're wrapping up, I guess, production on the last two shows of the season. Don't know. That'll be their call, because when they go on hiatus, it's going to be months from now. A lot of things are going to happen in the news cycle. They're going to probably look at it and see, because keep in mind, they produce these shows weeks, months ahead of time. So there are shows that are going to air when it comes back. They said, according to one report, it comes back in March sometime, that have him, you know, that where his role hasn't changed. And then those last couple of shows of the season, his role is going to change. The point being is that if they see diminished ratings and they believe It's a result of this incident. Keep in mind, when you had the police superintendent start, he mentioned Empire in his statement. If he is convicted, if Smollett is convicted here, and all this plays out in the media, which it's going to do. I mean, if his lawyer is going to, say my client is innocent and they're going to fight this, this is going to play out for a while. If their ratings diminish and they believe at Fox that it's a result of Smollett, then he's not going to be on that show much longer. That's your likelihood. So we'll see where they go. But that's their choice. Or they may decide to do nothing.
Well, you know, I saw it. Now, there are repeats of the show, but I forgot what network I saw about a month ago. The Cosby Show is still on.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, you know, the repeats might still play.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, one of the things that was talked about and the question was asked to the superintendent, Superintendent Johnson in Chicago, about the whole thing about mailing it. And he said, well, that's the FBI.
Right.
And then some analysis, I was going back and forth between CNN and Fox for a little bit trying to see any type of analysis on it. And they said, well, that could actually be the most serious charge.
Mm-hmm.
That mm-hmm. could be even a higher charge. He could get some serious jail time. You cannot use the Postal Service to send a threatening letter, even if it's to yourself, and it even ups the charge, apparently, if you put in a substance, even if it is not a harmful substance, if the threat, because that's what you're attempting to do.
You're looking to invoke fear on others.
You're looking to invoke fear on others and create terror in others, which I'm sure it did to everybody who was on that cast in the studio. And they said, you know, that the whatever charge they decide to do on that, you know, you're getting at that point to a terrorist hoax, which can get you significant jail time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you looked at it. You know, we again on blogs yesterday, you and I had the discussion. Well, will he just plead guilty in order to stay out of jail and just get community service and some probation for this? And then I saw the press conference yesterday and I went, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's an intensity right now. There seems to be an intensity in the police department. I'm sure that intensity probably is in the district attorney's office right now. There's an intensity and a pressure right now. And it'll be interesting to see, like I say, what the FBI comes up with and whether the FBI decides to also charge Jussie Smollett on a federal charge. And what specifically that federal charge would be, I don't know at this point.
Right. And again, if the as you mentioned, if that same anger and frustration is shared by the DA, and then with a federal prosecutor, if they believe it's worth pursuing, because of the nature of it, it is not just the claim and the filing of the false report. It's going out on national television and promoting it.
I watched the interview before,
mm-hmm.
and I watched it again after.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, after when I watched it yesterday, after the press conference, after everything that happened, I went, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a whole different ball game mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. watching that interview,
mm-hmm.
knowing that he has been charged, and the police say he's guilty, and we have the evidence mm-hmm. that he's guilty. Oh,
yeah.
You and I talked about this yesterday, and I said, there's no way he wrote a check.
Yes.
He yeah. wrote a check.
It's as planned as this was, it always goes back to the evidence. I mean, in any case, it always goes back to the evidence. But it's clear that the police have plenty of evidence. They have all they need. Because what was there? Think about it. He promoted, Gary, the evidence in his claims. He promoted the evidence. the pictures, and if there's going to be a federal case, the pictures of the envelope and the claims there, those initial claims are part of the evidence, not just the physical evidence, but the claims that he was making, because you talk about the purpose of putting a substance in that envelope. That's to invoke fear in others. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, he went out to others and told others he promoted it. He went on ABC Good Morning America and promoted his story. This, in part, was to bring about fear in people.
Yeah.
Not just in Chicago.
You know, you make a great point that when you see it afterwards and you realize, you're like, whoa, he's continuing the act of terror.
Right.
While he's doing that interview,
yes,
the TV interview on GMA, mm-hmm. he still is. That's what he's. It's the continuation of promoting that terror, because he allegedly did it.
Mm-hmm.
The police believe he did it. They have the evidence that he did it. They have the witnesses that he did it, and he is out there promoting a couple of days before just how frightened he is and how frightened everybody else is.
Crying on television.
He is stoking that fear over and over and over and over again, which I found really interesting from a legal standpoint.
Right.
When I saw that his legal team went after the Chicago police. His legal team on Thursday, this from Fox, criticized the Chicago police for what the department referred to as the Empire Actors' phony attack. In a statement obtained by Fox News, the legal counsel said the nation witnessed an organized law enforcement spectacle that has no place in the American legal system. The presumption of innocence, a bedrock in the search for justice, was trampled upon at the expense of Mr. Smollett, and notably on the eve of a mayoral election, his team continued. Mr. Smollett is a young man of impeccable character and integrity who fiercely and solemnly maintains his innocence, betrayed by a system that apparently wants to skip due process and proceed directly to sentencing. By the way, what you saw yesterday is not unheard of. The presumption of innocence is in the court and the jury, not from the police department.
Right. No, they can say, we believe he did this.
Right. The police department said, we have the evidence he did it.
Right.
Of course they believe he did it. And so my point is, what you're doing, the lawyers have said, let us go and attack. And who is the symbol of the Chicago Police Department right now to all of America?
Mm.
Superintendent Johnson.
Yep.
You're not going to win that one.
No, you're not. Because if you want to play this out in the media, and that's what his lawyer does time and time again, then guess what? You're going to have a superintendent here that likely won't have any problem. Well, he didn't in the press conference with the evidence that they have, talking, lining out what they found. That evidence is going to be clear. You're going to lose that in the court of public opinion all day long. And if you try and take that to court and deny that it happened, wow.
And if you're going to try to say that and try to convince a jury that there should be a presumption of innocence from the police department and the prosecutor.
Right.
Well, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, presumption of innocence from the court system and the judge and the jury and the instructions that they get. Yes. But the prosecution is always going to tell you, when they prosecute a case, the people that we believe, the perpetrators here, they're guilty.
Yes.
They're not going to say, it's up to you to decide whether they're guilty, and we're not really sure, and we think we have some evidence that might send you in the direction that it... No, they're going to tell you he's guilty and he did it.
The two brothers are cooperating with authorities, and they have, when you write a check for $3,500, they don't even need to go into his financial records. They can go into theirs, because if they deposited that check, or the place where they cashed that check, will have a copy of that check.
This is going to be fascinating if they decide legally to see Garagos goes with this, and if he stays as the attorney, the lead attorney or one of the attorneys, mm-hmm. and if he's their media attorney, it'll be fascinating to see if he's on tonight.
Right.
On the 24/7 news channels.
Right, yeah.
And what he's saying. Remember, he was Kaepernick's lawyer, too.
Right, right.
If you want to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Now, we know that the Nigerian brothers, they've already testified before the grand jury. And
right.
And they did that so mm-hmm. they can get, so they've got them on record under oath.
Yep. They can move on, and they've got everything. And I'm sure that if there are other questions that come up, you know, that they're going to make themselves available. They don't want to go to jail.
And the other question that came up a lot yesterday, well, how come they weren't charged? Well, because they always go after the ringleader. And they mm-hmm. probably said, look, we want him. And I don't know what one thing that hasn't come out. Did they know that he planned on filing a false police report?
Right, because if they believed it was only going to be on social media and they helped him stage this, I don't know at what point they would have broken the law. They didn't file a false police report. But if they knew he was going to go to the police,
yes,
then that could be part of a conspiracy. But then on the other part of it, the mailing of the letter on the federal side of it, if they had no part in that, if they said, hey, wait, whoa, we put it together, we didn't know he was going to put that in the mail.
Right.
Again, if they didn't mail it at that point, up to the point that it was mailed, they didn't have a responsibility.
But on the state level, at least, they went, well, no, we want them as the witnesses because we want the guy who planned it all.
Right, right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. We'll get to more of your calls and comments on the fact that Jussie Smollett, the actor, was charged yesterday with filing a false police report. We'll have more coming up from the press conference that was held yesterday. But some other news here. We got to make sure we get through everything because it's a Friday show and we got a weekend. So got to clean the desk off, right?
Yeah, why not?
U.S. crude oil production hit 12 million barrels per day in mid-February, according to the government. The crude output jumped more than 1.7 million barrels per day compared to the same time in 2018, from roughly 10.3 million barrels to 12 million barrels a day. They didn't expect that kind of number till probably, what did I see?
End of the year.
The government didn't forecast the U.S. hitting 12 million barrels per day until 2020.
Yeah.
It's the Permian Basin, Texas, New Mexico.
You're welcome, y'all.
Okay, that would have been from in its January 2018 estimate. They said we would not hit 12 million barrels a day till 2020.
Okay. Yeah.
In their November estimate, they didn't expect it until the middle of this year.
Hmm.
I mean, that's how, think about that.
Yeah.
That's how fast they are producing it. You know, you and I talked about the fact of, could we be close to, I mean, you're, if you're talking about 1 point, you know, you're talking close to 2 million barrels a day more. Mm-hmm. Well, that means by 2023, we're completely and totally self-sufficient.
Yeah, yeah, right. Who was it? It was Tillerson that actually said it while he was still at ExxonMobil, that said, what year did he say, 2020 or 2021, I think, and this goes back, I don't know, 4 or 5 years maybe, when he said that we'll be self-sufficient by then. It'll be interesting to see, because what are we at right now in consumption? Where is it, 18 per day?
Is that where we are, 18, 19, 20,
So that in 2017, an average of about 19.9 million barrels per day.
Okay.
It does. So, the reason it fluctuates is a lot of times because of the when gas prices go down, you see the purchase of larger vehicles. And we have seen that increase of larger vehicles. So the consumption goes up. But when the prices go down, consumption goes up. When prices go up, consumption goes down. But anywhere between 18.5 and let's say 20 million barrels a day, that's kind of your fluctuation depending on the year and the pricing.
So when all of our AOC supporters out there.
Yeah.
That's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for people that don't know.
Right.
When do we start reversing that and then get down to zero production and zero consumption?
Yeah, good question. Zero.
Zero, yes. When do we get down to zero?
That's the goal.
And I know probably the average person out there, this means nothing to you at all. For people that have been following this for the longest time, for you and I that sat here just 9 years ago, mm-hmm. even 8 years ago, and we had people that listened to our show. We had listeners calling and say, you guys are just, you truly are idiots overnight.
Mm-hmm.
We're to peak oil. There's no more oil left. And we said, no, you're wrong. To remember the number of people that would call our show and want to talk about peak oil and how we need to get to the water vehicle. Remember the water vehicle?
Yeah, right.
And the fact that the government was hiding everything.
Mm-hmm. They're in cahoots.
They were hiding the water vehicle. Mm-hmm. We can run automobiles on water. Mm-hmm. And then that sort of disappeared, and there was that whole conspiracy that was being hidden from us. But peak oil was huge.
Oh, yeah.
And I know we were talking, you know, because you and I started working in 2005, and I can't remember when it had to be around 2008, 2009, right? Because that's when it was. Right. That's when gasoline prices went over, you know, $4 a gallon here in Texas, which means it was much higher. What, over $5 in California places,
right? Yeah.
And so that's when it really started. And you guys, you got to realize when peak oil. And we said, nope, we don't need to be in this place, and we won't be in this place because of technology, and the new developments in fracking.
Right.
And so
I think eventual conversion to natural gas for some vehicles, the infrastructure, the build out of the infrastructure is going to take a while, as it always does.
But we have a glut of that, right? We have more than we need. I mean, we're totally self-sufficient in natural gas, I believe.
Yeah, and we don't import
anything. From what I
don't think we do. I think we export.
Or if we do import, we're exporting a lot more than we import.
Yeah. But I mean, when you talk about what has come about as a result of innovation. Sorry, Mr. Obama, you didn't build that. This is about innovation. In fact, during your administration, you worked hard against the private sector. Forget about the production on federal lands. You worked hard against the private sector, including the Permian Basin, and regulatory issues trying to draw down the production, limit the production, and technology beat you square.
And you couldn't control private and state lands,
right,
which was where it all happened, but the President Obama tried to limit it.
They tried to limit it on private sector lands through regulations.
Right.
And a lot of those regulations, of course, went away. No other nation, by the way, has ever reached 12 million per day. No other country has ever done that. That's never happened.
Wow. It is the biggest good news story that really goes completely unreported. It is something that if you said this when we were saying it 10 years ago, people thought, I thought you guys were conspiracy theorists. We're never going to get to that production. Go, well, we're talking technology. We're not talking conspiracy. This is not an Ocasio Cortez. When we were saying this, 9, 10 years ago, 11 years ago, probably even 12 years ago, probably because we knew that the technology was coming. It wasn't conspiracy. We knew you're not talking about what Ocasio Cortez is talking about, which is the fact that there is no way to produce the energy that this country needs consistently with what she is proposing. That technology does not exist. There is no indication that it will exist. Nobody can identify even what that technology is. The technology in fracking was just perfecting it. We had the materials to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We had the ability to create the materials and the machinery to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have wait a minute. I don't know if we have what she's talking about because she won't tell us what it is.
Right. Well, and that's where you have people coming out trying to defend her saying, oh, well, they're just saying that should be a goal. No. No. They're saying that we just should use less. No.
No.
That's not it.
That way you put out a memo that says we should use less.
Right. Yeah.
That's what
that's not what the Green Deal is.
Right.
And I heard someone, in fact, in recent days, talk about it makes the wealthy wealthier. It makes, when we talk about the expansion of wealth, talk about being able to get something out of the ground that in the ground has zero purpose and demand until it's above ground and processed and has instant demand and value. That kind of expansion of wealth is exactly what this country was founded on. People don't want to hear it.
It makes the wealthier wealthy. As opposed to what system would you be looking at?
Because those are the people that will buy into the Bernie BS. That only the rich benefit. That's the implication here. That only the rich benefit. Then go spend some time in the Permian Basin. Go spend some time in Pennsylvania. Go spend some time in those areas where that production is. And by the way, hasn't always been. When those wildcatters in the 80s were going out of business left and right, nobody was crying except the wildcatters. It was the innovation over those decades that brought about that expansion of wealth, because that's what we as a nation do best.
Well, if you say people don't benefit, I mean, you have to realize what we would be paying for gasoline today, what we'd be paying for natural gas. Right. Remember, we were paying more for natural gas 15 years ago.
Oh, sure. That's a great point, and because it only recently bottomed out. And part of that was because of what? They realized, holy cow, we have a lot. And holy cow, we can get it cheaply.
Well, and so when if you look at it, and I would like, probably somebody has done it. I'll try to do some research on it, see if I can find it. What would gasoline prices be today if we didn't advance the technology of fracking as we have had? if the Permian Basin didn't exist.
Horizontal drilling,
Bakken Shale, and just everything that we have produced here, and then worldwide too.
Right.
What would it be? What would the estimates be to what we need and what was being produced if we didn't have fracking, and then extrapolate that out to what a barrel of oil would be as to what gasoline would be? Because I wouldn't be surprised that if you said, okay, if we shut it down the way that the last administration wished to do, what would have been in this country? Would gasoline have been $6-7? What would heating oil be? What would it be? How much more expensive would it be for the middle class to heat their homes? You're talking about thousands of dollars a year. You think about it. If gasoline prices were $2 or $3 more per gallon, and you're talking about a barrel of oil that is, you know, back to $130, $140 a barrel, which it could be, what would heating oil be if we didn't have the glut of natural gas? What would natural gas be? You're talking about thousands of dollars for the average family each and every year.
And a polar vortex that would be very expensive.
but that's money back in people's own pocket. That's wealth that isn't talked about. It's like when they talked about what Walmart did, what Amazon is doing. You think about the combination of Amazon and Walmart. How much cheaper not only the production of goods are, you know, and what do they say, Walmart, and this goes back a few years ago, was saving the average family $1,900 a year because it forced everybody to be more competitive and brought the cost down of all the goods and services that you buy. What about shipping? Look how cheap shipping is compared to what it was before.
Well, in fact, it was Walmart that pressured a lot of the companies that made the products to take some of the water out of laundry detergent. Take the air out of the cereal boxes. Yep. Why? Mm-hmm. So they could fit more on trucks. So ultimately, it was about the bottom line. You can control shipping costs. Bezos is doing the same thing. Bezos is essentially trying to do, and I think succeeding to a certain extent, what Sam Walton was doing, building that proprietary supply chain and controlling that supply chain to a great degree. Why? So that the customer can benefit. They can be competitive in a world that has competition. You don't have to shop at a Walmart or any specific discount store to get the benefit of their existence. It's the competition that comes along with that existence that benefits everyone.
But just amazing, already up to 12 million barrels a day as of February of oil. That's nobody saw that coming. We saw an increase. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody expected, though, that, you know, you're talking 10, 15 years ago,
right? Yeah.
That we would be looking at really total self-sufficiency in oil, and to the point where we can be totally self-sufficient here in this country and export it at the same time.
Right.
That's just unbelievable. That's technology.
Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
I love the city of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department, warts and all. But this publicity stunt was a scar that Chicago didn't earn and certainly didn't deserve.
Well, I mean, he's a police chief, so he's saying publicity stunt, but he knows it's a crime because he's part of the group of people that put together the evidence to charge him with the crime. But it's not just a publicity stunt. It was a criminal act by Jussie Smollett. Mm-hmm. So. Will be interesting, really, to see. I'm really interested because it's a Friday night, and you know the 24-hour news channels are going to try to get his legal people on.
Right.
And Mark Garagos, who, was Kaepernick's attorney. By the way, Kaepernick really became part of the machine real quick. We never got a chance to talk about that. He settled. instead of going after the NFL and proving that they were and getting the evidence that he settled for money.
Right. Yeah, this was a few days ago, but we were on other stories. But I didn't see anyone leak an amount. Did you?
No.
Don't know what the amount is, but they settled.
No. Don't know what they don't know, and we won't. Don't know what they settled for.
Right,
and
right.
And NFL took no admission for collusion whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So Kaepernick was for the money.
Yeah, got the money.
Got the money. Got the money. Who cares about the cause?
Mm.
Got the money.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we don't know anything else because in terms of an agreement for the NFL to promote something. I mean, was that part of an agreement to support a certain cause? Because if there's a non-disclosure clause, a clause in it, I guess that wouldn't be a part of that non-disclosure. But I didn't read anywhere where the NFL agreed to put out a public service campaign or be a part of anything.
No, nothing. This
promote
was,
his cause.
No, this was simply about his collusion charge.
Right.
Yeah.
Here is your forecast.
After a midweek February winter storm in the east, we'll take a break there today. Sunshine for the most part from the Midwest into the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. The areas of heavy rain continue for the south in the lower Tennessee Valley. Showers and possible thunderstorms today in eastern Texas, over through the Ark-La-Tex, into the lower Tennessee Valley, through the states of Kentucky, and over to Georgia along the coast. Now, if you're running I-40 today across the state of Oklahoma, you should be clear. But when you get into Arkansas, Tennessee, you're going to pick up some heavy amounts of rain. I-55 will get a good dousing today, too. And then north of St. Louis, things dry out clear to Chicago. Heavy snow is forecast for the southwest and southern Rockies. Over a foot for some of the ranges in Arizona, southern Utah, and southwestern Colorado. And there's a weekend look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. Let's take a look over the last couple of nights, and let's go to CNN, see how they were talking about the Jesse Smollett case here. All right?
All right.
All right, here we go.
And listen, again, I want you to say, I have nothing but the utmost respect for my friends at ABC and other things. Nice. They Robin did a terrific job on that interview. I'm just talking about how you respond to this sort of crisis. That doesn't really work anymore, and I think that is old school. This is playing out every single moment in cable news. Sean Hannity's going to eat Jussie Smollett's lunch every single second. Tucker Carlson is going to eat Jussie Smollett's lunch every single second.
The President of the United States
is going to eat his lunch. And who does the President of the United States watch every night?
You.
Cable news. Yeah, well, cable news.
And who's that on? Who owns that?
Smollett created everything. Anything that happens is due to the evil thing that he did.
Yeah. You're going to, but this is the cause and effect of, and it's built by the assumption of guilt from the left toward people that didn't even exist, except they did. Collectively, they were Trump supporters. Smollett didn't have this idea just out of the blue. It came because he was part of it. He said it during the GMA interview. He said, I come hard at 45. meaning he doesn't hold back when it comes to President Trump. Well, okay, as long as you don't cross the line. But guess what? You couldn't contain yourself, according to the police. You decided you needed to ramp up your game.
Well, who was it on CNN? Woman anchor who said, this is what we become in 2019, you know, after, you know, believing the attack as if.
Right.
And the point was, see, because Trump is president, these hate crimes are happening all the time. Well,
right.
Number one, the hate crimes aren't happening all the time. They're not happening because Trump is president. In fact, if you go through almost every single major allegation of a hate crime of Donald Trump supporters, and we were looking at it the other night, how many of them there are over the last 2 years, even a little bit over 2 years, probably 2.5 years. There's just all, and every single major one was recanted, was a hate crime hoax. Mm. Does that mean we have a hate crime hoax epidemic? Is that the nation that we've become? I'll put that question out to the Democrats. Are you so desperate that you have to not only create but promote hate crime hoaxes? Is that the nation that we have become? Again, I'm responding to them. Because we are not a nation of hate crimes. We are not a nation of hate crime hoaxes. They happen, but they are very few and far between. We don't look at it, you know, Eric and I understand that there's a difference. There's a difference between social media. There's a difference even, you know, when you talk about the entire media, be it talk radio, be it 24/7 news channels, be it the arguing that goes back and forth and the rage back and forth. Well, that's not the case when you go out in the real world. You know, I was telling you when I flew again this weekend, I'm always amazed because an airplane is is one place where everybody understands what the rules and regulations are and everybody abides by the rules and regulations. And everybody really, I mean, 99.99999999%, you know, nobody's talking back. Nobody is complaining about it. Nobody is whining about it. Everybody behaves in a complete and total civil manner.
With the exception of alcohol.
Exception of alcohol. But I realize, really, though, most people do that because they do it voluntarily because they understand that's, you know, that's the way that it has to be. But in most of the things in our lives, almost everything that we do, and you and I talk about this, you know, all of a sudden, and it's not even on our show and it's not even our callers, it's more social media because, you know, basically what we get here is... since we talk about the substance of the issues, you could say it's tame rhetoric, rhetorically speaking, than it would be on social media, where it can just be insane. But of course, I don't expect it to be anything except insane when people are arguing with phrases.
Yeah.
When you argue with phrases, yeah, you're really not going to have, you know, much substance, and things are going to get crazy to begin with. But I also know that that's part of America. That's part of free speech. In free speech, there's going to be a ton of noise. In fact, the majority of what you're going to get in a free speech nation is a ton of noise and a ton of insanity. And people have learned to ignore, we don't call it white noise anymore, do we? The static noise. And it's there, but it's in the background. And okay, what's really going on? Critical thinkers, that's what you do. Most of the critical thinkers that I know have no problem with what's going on in social. They make, like, I don't spend a lot of time on Twitter. I don't spend a lot of time where the things are going insane. But I read this and I do that and I do that. We're able to figure out. In fact, it's never been easier to figure out what's really going on in our society. You do have to pay attention, but it's not that hard. It's no harder than it's ever been, I know, in my life, to know what's going on. Now, when you do this job, yes, at times when you wake up and you have to prepare a 5-hour show every day, there comes to part at 3 p.m. when you're like, man, 20 years ago, there was nothing to talk about. And now it's, I don't even know what's in the news cycle right now. at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, whether midnight, Eric and I will even be discussing any of these things. So how much effort do I put into the research and everything that's going on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to prepare for midnight? Yeah, that thought goes through our heads, but we do that professionally. And most people would say, tough, that's the job that you chose. Quit whining about it. But yeah, but the average person, you can keep track what's going on. But the Jussie Smollett's are not what the nation has become. Are there people that will support hate crimes? Yes. Now, what have we become a nation of that I think helps to enable that kind of action or that kind of hate crime hoax? What exists out there? As you and I talked about earlier, this is all, we believe, part of it is a result that we have become a society where we celebrate victimhood. If you can be the bigger victim, then you can rise to a bigger celebrity status. And so their big argument was going on yesterday on social media. Well, he did it because he hated Trump. No, it was because he wanted money. No, it's because he hated Trump. No, it's because he wanted the money. Hey, none of us know. You can't get inside of his head. Now, the police say he did it for money. Obviously, he hated Trump. So maybe a combination of all of that in there. But what was it? What was the underlying motivation? What was the incentive? The incentive is, if I can be a victim, and I can be a victim because I'm black, I'm gay, and the oppressor is white people who support Trump, that then I am the ultimate celebrity in the liberal mindset. I am the ultimate victim, which is the ultimate celebrity, the ultimate hero, and I believe it will help me in some way.
Yeah, this is going to help my career.
Yeah.
And that's the whole move. For him, it wasn't ever about justice. For him, justice had nothing to do with it. For him, the real victims of violence weren't a part of it. He didn't care. It was about his career. This was going to elevate me. Whether it was going to get him more money on his show, I have no idea. But he believed it was going to elevate his profile.
Better status at the parties because he was a victim of the Trump oppressors.
Right.
That at the latest parties, he would be viewed with more celebrity and more homage. Who knows? I can't tell you.
Here's the thing. It's interesting that he shares the lawyer with another guy who might have been coming to the end of his career and decided to pull a move about publicity. Now, he didn't break the law in doing it. But Kaepernick was looking to get attention.
Yeah.
And if the police are accurate here that he wasn't happy about his income, Smollett, then you go back to the possibility of whatever it was, whether he just wasn't getting his end of the bargain on the show, or he believed his time on the show was up, or he just simply wanted to go on to the next level. According to the police, this was motivation to bring himself to a new higher place, whether it's earnings, whatever it was going to be. But clearly, he was looking for attention, was he not?
Yes.
He was looking for attention. He's an actor. That's what he does for a living. And he believed this was going to benefit him. He didn't believe it was going to hurt him. It was quite the opposite.
Well, I believe that he figured he was a better actor than police are investigators.
That's pretty good acting there on Good Morning America.
Yeah. And by the way, I was thinking yesterday when you had the detective who was talking and walking you through, okay, here is the, and I thought to myself, I said, Andrew McCabe, are you watching this here? This is how investigators actually investigate, looking at little pieces of evidence and moving forward.
This is how they talk.
Yeah, this is actually
in front
how
of
they,
the media.
Yeah, this is how they talk in front of the media. Andrew McCabe, James Comey. Again, your careers are probably over in law enforcement, just a note that that's how investigators talk.
Right. You guys talk like politicians or actors.
Or actors.
So
that's a question. Who's been a better actor this week?
Oh, that's a really great question.
McCabe or Smollett?
But all of this was about elevating himself, about bringing attention to himself and putting himself at some point in a better place career-wise. By being the hero, by being the martyr, by being the victim. I've seen that show before. No, thank you, Mr. Smollett.
And you're not talking Empire.
Nope.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He's Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara. Got this message. Gas prices may be down and oil prices may be down, but the national debt, you don't see any benefit because of the national debt. There isn't a show that spends more time on the national debt than us. Americans don't care, number one, and one has nothing to do with the other.
No, those are separate topics. Everything.
And, right.
There would be a greater value of most products in the marketplace if the debt were lower.
Right.
That's a given.
Right. But people would be suffering more if gasoline prices were high. So your premise is wrong to begin with.
We're with you that the national debt is way too high.
Right. But if gas prices were higher, it would not benefit you or be the same if oil prices were higher. If the production of oil was down and the debt was still the same, the higher gas prices would be worse, not better. So your premise is wrong.
Yeah,
people just drive me crazy right now. They just drive me crazy.
Well, it wouldn't affect the fiscal policy mindset on Capitol Hill. That's
right.
Is the whole point. If fuel prices were 99 cents or $9, if it was $9 a gallon, you still wouldn't have a change in the fiscal policy because the mindset comes from, the voters. The voters. The people in the districts and states of those on Capitol Hill don't care by and large.
No.
We know that conservatives do.
Right. But the Republican Party doesn't anymore. And
no.
A significant portion and a growing portion of the voting Republican party.
Right.
Not the actual party, but the voters. They don't care about debt anymore.
Right. No, they don't.
They don't. Otherwise,
it's not a discussion.
There'd be an uproar. I saw the other day that the deficit keeps going up, and Republicans are mum. Yeah, because the voters are.
Yeah, if
you're a politician,
if we were all screaming like back in the day, they would be screaming about it.
Yeah. Republicans don't care about the debt.
Nope.
The voter doesn't care about the debt.
No.
Conservatives might, but they're a very, very small portion of the Republican Party now.
Right.
Fiscal conservatives have almost disappeared inside the Republican Party.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when people say they've gone left on fiscal issues, absolutely they have. But that wouldn't make it, that doesn't have anything to do with gas prices.
No.
You are seeing a benefit because gas prices are lower.
Mm-hmm.
That's more money that you have. Yeah. If gas prices were higher, I don't believe that I'm actually having to explain this. If gas prices are higher, irrespective of the debt, it would hurt people more.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.